series will be on December 24th at 6 p.m. And listen online to the full series at kbo.fm/tunein/turnon.
KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/stationmanagerhire2013.
Welcome to Disability Awareness. I'm your host, Grace Eagle Reed, and my guest today is Laura Sandow. Laura, introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you're doing. And today's subject matter is invisible disabilities. But first, let's hear who Laura is and what she's up to.
Hi, I'm Laura. I am a student at Portland State currently, studying social art practices. I am a disabled veteran, and I feel that addressing invisible disabilities is an important issue for people my age and older, as well as younger, because it is such a thing that is not really recognized in the community.
Right. Well, the key word is invisible, huh?
Invisible.
Yeah. When I'm out of my scooter and I'm on a cane, I'm 70, so I am an appropriate old lady on a cane. But when I'm in my scooter and on my walker, I'm obviously something's going on. But when you don't have any of those things and you have a disability, your last name is Sandow?
Sandow, correct.
Sandow, Laura Sandow. And tell us about what is your invisible disability?
Well, I have severe arthritis in my lower back. I injured my back in the Navy and had disc surgery several years ago. And as a result, I have extremely bad pain, severe arthritis in my lower back. I also have nerve damage in both of my arms due to a cyst in my spinal cord.
Now, did these come on because of your service?
They did. They are service-related. I believe the nerve damage was aggravated by military service. I know the back injury was caused by military service. Mm-hmm. I also suffer from PTSD and depression, which I would mm-hmm. definitely consider an invisible disability.
Yes. Well, there's quite a bit out there on PTSD. What is it exactly? What's going on with that?
Well, PTSD is very hard to deal with when you've been in a situation of abuse or violence, something so extreme that it jolts your psyche. It kind of stays with you, and it winds up almost crippling you mentally crippling you by taking away your confidence, being afraid of things. Just an uneasy feeling about a lot of things. It can really affect how you speak. In fact, I'm nervous because I probably, mm-hmm. whereas I would used to have been nervous. I think for me, it's taken away a lot of my confidence, mm-hmm. which is a huge thing. And then my ability to pick up some things that other people learn easily has also been affected.
When did you enter the service?
I entered the service in April of 2001.
And what was your status?
I was a meteorology and oceanography specialist enlisted.
Wow.
Yes, I served in the Navy, and I served in Guantanamo Bay. Mm-hmm, and that's where a lot of my PTSD issues come from, which I think are understandable.
May I mention, you have a book on it, a booklet on it, but I know you want to talk about that at a later date as far as the actual content. But you want to talk a little bit more about, you know, that the connection of PTSD with Guantanamo?
Certainly. First of all, it was wonderful to do this project. It was a collaborative project between me, myself, and Sarah Merck, and Lucy Bellwood was the illustrator. A beautiful comic was put together, and it was put online in Symbolia. It's a website online, and we just got it printed. And it basically tells the story of how I came from an abusive relationship in Dubai to joining the Navy and winding up in Guantanamo Bay.
Jeez, what a journey.
Yes. So I have seen many different things, experienced many different things. I was particularly affected by what happened in Guantanamo because I was so against what was going on. Mm-hmm. It wound up making me very depressed. It's where a lot of my PTSD comes from. Right. It got to the point there, I actually didn't stay my full term. I left early because it was mm-hmm. just not a place for me to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that I think most people could understand that, mm-hmm. But it still affects me today. I have nightmares.
Yeah.
I fear people coming up behind me, loud noises. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So between the physical abuse I experienced in Dubai and the situation where we were, you know, had prisoners in Guantanamo that were being abused. Mm-hmm. Very big conflict for me.
Well, and as you had put it when we were emailing back and forth, it's commonly called shell shock.
Yes.
Which would be a World War II, World War I for that matter, but World War II term. And the reason I know that is because my dad, he was in the Army, and he called it shell shock, and he would display, we didn't know anything about PTSD at that time, it wasn't labeled, but he would talk about shell shock and go sideways quite often around that. We would like to do a whole show on your Guantanamo Bay situation and introduce the book and whatnot. So if you'd like to give a website where people can find it at some point when it's finished, I know you're building that. What is, as far as an invisible disability, many people have invisible disabilities, but this is about yours. How do you, you know, it's a problem, it's a struggle, it's a challenge, certainly, mm-hmm. but how do you navigate through the world on a daily basis? What are some of the things that you experience?
Well, it's been very difficult. It's taken me years to get from a state where I was basically locking myself at home and not going anywhere, not doing anything, and slowly getting support from community. One of the big things that happened is that my friend S. Brian Wilson recommended joining the Veterans for Peace here in town, and he said that that would be a great support. And I wasn't sure, but I have found that with that group, I've gotten a lot of support and have started working in the community. And in tandem to that, I've been going to school doing social arts. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of had to break out of my shell and learn to speak to people again and to build up my confidence.
It's a big deal to be at this mic today, isn't it?
It is. It's a little nerve-wracking.
If people could see your face, it's like deer in the headlights. And I'm sitting here going, it's okay. It's all right. I really appreciate you coming out and being at the mic, because this is the situation. I mean, unless you've got this situation going on, you know, of course, people that don't have this going on are not going to understand.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you do other than support? And of course, the support, you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Well, I feel that the support I've gotten is wonderful, especially Veterans for Peace. They understand exactly where I'm coming from, so that's been a nice surprise. I've also gotten a lot of support from my professors who see that I really am engaged and interested in this type of work, and I think that they have given me plenty of opportunities to show myself that I can do it, and I think that's been really wonderful.
It is impressive. It's absolutely impressive. I know one of the words that came up when we were again talking is discrimination.
Yes.
What kind of discrimination, if any, do you experience, even though, I mean, that's a lot of courage and faith and guts to come out and function when you literally can't function, you know?
Right. Well, I had a regular job, 8-to-5 kind of thing, until the fall of 2008 when the economy collapsed. And at that time, I was having a lot of difficulty. I was losing a lot of time from work. And it was very hard to cope with an 8-to-5 kind of job. My boss was very understanding, but when it came time to cut people, I was the first to go.
Sure.
And I feel like a lot of that was because I was stunted in my ability to do certain things, like lift heavy objects or learn as quickly as he wanted me to, or whatever. It came in many different forms.
Well, we're not, I can identify with that, even though I'm 70 and retired now. Well, I write books and stuff, but I mean, I'm retired from working. I could never do a 9-to-5 or an 8-to-5. I could never do it because of the same thing. I have this, at that time, I wasn't even on a cane, when I have MS. And that's another invisible disability until you get into a device that shows, ooh, something's going on there. And the expectations of a boss that's paying you good money, hopefully, is, you have to run with the herd, right?
Yep.
So what do people do that are listening right now and that can't run with the herd but look like they can?
Well, and that's I guess, one of the questions I want to address for this show.
Yeah,
I have difficulty disclosing that I have a disability, especially in a circumstance like PSU, where pretty much everybody is much younger than me and in much better shape. They look at me, they see a mid-30s woman who looks perfectly normal, and they don't know that I can't do the same things they can do. I've learned to speak up about that. And in some situations like school, they embrace it and they say, okay, this is how we can work around it. And most people are understanding. But you still get people who don't understand why I can't run or lift something heavy or something like that. And they just assume that I can. So usually if you're in a group that feels comfortable, you can do that. But if you don't, or in your work situation, I have run into discrimination, as I mentioned, from my previous job. I think I've also been discriminated against getting other jobs because of that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to go about showing people. I know there's the Invisible Disability Association has an actual wristband that you can wear for awareness, which I thought was an interesting idea.
Tell us a little bit more about that. That's interesting. I'll get one.
Yeah,
I would love to get one. That's great.
It's InvisibleDisabilitiesAssociation.org.
Wow.
Has a blue bracelet, just like the other rubber band ones or rubber ones you see.
Yes.
And I think it's a really excellent idea. I think if more people did that and, you know, kind of subtly showed that this is the situation, or I support people who are in the situation, it just brings more awareness and more sensitivity to people who may not be aware.
That's very good. And I just started, I've been the host of the show not too long. And I just started this show, so I wasn't aware of that. So that's a new place for me to go and inform people as to what's going on. But PSU has, I know when I went to PSU, I graduated with a master's in conflict resolution of all things, right? And I was one of the more conflicted people in the classrooms all the time, because I'm 70. And I talk about getting a degree. I got my degree in 2008. So I was an old lady in the classroom, and it was very difficult. And then, of course, I had other issues. But they have a pretty good support group with their disability. What do they call it, even? I can't remember.
I don't remember what they call it. But, yeah, they do have a very good disability program that helps people make it through school. And it's wonderful. It's really a good program.
Yeah, I took advantage of that, too. And they are. They're wonderful. I don't know if they're still at Neuberger Hall or not, but are they still there? Yeah, they helped me a lot, and they helped a lot of people. And, of course, that's state law, and they're getting, you know, they're in compliance, you know, with, but that's another thing is the lack of accessibility on a lot of, you know, you don't have a cane or a walker or any of that, and yet we had to load. I just want to give a shout out to Laura right now. She helped me load my walker into her car and to get us over here, because I don't drive anymore, and she showed up at the curb, and I got this big honking walker, and we fold it, and it took a guy standing on the curb for the three of us to load the thing.
The three
into
of
the
us
car.
With disabilities to load it in.
One walker into the car. Oh, and it, I'm glad we're laughing about it. Oh my gosh.
We made it.
Oh my gosh. We made it. Well, that's the courage and the bravery of the disabled. This is, you are listening to Disability Awareness, KBOO. Welcome anybody that's just tuned in. This is, it's on the fourth Monday of every month at 11 till 12. Or 11 till 11:30, I'm sorry. Not till 12. 11 to 11:30. So, Laura, we, and my guest today is Laura Sandow, and we talked about post-traumatic stress disorder and abusive issues in Dubai, was it?
It was Dubai, correct.
Dubai.
Yeah.
You feel like talking anything about that?
I think that's a whole other show. But
yeah, yeah. And, you know, this is whatever you want to say. You know, I said, just whatever you want to say. Because I know things can trigger, you know, we can get triggered by memories and all that. But the point is, abuse, disability, invisible disabilities are, you are not going to be able to go out of your house and walk down the street without running into somebody on a daily basis that has an invisible disability. It be it abuse issues, addiction issues,
Learning disabilities. Psychiatric conditions. There's a lot of, definitely a lot of that. I had an interesting statistic from disabledworld.com that an estimated 96% of the people with chronic medical conditions have an invisible disability.
Laura, what this show is designed so that we talk about the challenge or the problem in the beginning. So what are some of the solutions are you aware of? And I know you're doing for yourself, you know, you're doing certain things for yourself, and I'm also doing that. Part of it is like coming over here, you know, and making sure that this program, because we need awareness, don't we?
Absolutely. Awareness is very important.
For the non-disabled, and I don't expect people that are not disabled or the non-disabled to understand. I mean, you know, I'm not the center of everybody's universe, so it's
and
like a...
It's very hard to understand disability until you actually have it yourself. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to imagine.
And let's hope that nobody other than, I mean, we get what we get, and we do what we do, we disabled are the disabled. But what do we do to bridge that gap between the disabled and the non-disabled, if you will?
Well, I've found, even though I've been rather shy and I have issues with PTSD, that talking to people has been the best way to deal, to be upfront with people and let them know what's going on so that they understand fully the situation. Communication is just as powerful as it can be, and I think that that's the best way to go about educating other people.
And you're communicating through art?
Yes, yes.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I'm actually an undergraduate student, but I've been honored to take a lot of the art and social practice classes at PSU, and I've decided that's what I want to do with my life. I want to help people. I want to create art in social situations. I want people to be engaged in art. Art is very therapeutic, yes. And it's a great way to express yourself. And I think anybody can do that kind of work, but you know, it does take a special drive to want to work with people and educate people on other things that are going on, pointing out things in society that are not working well, for example. That's something I would like to do.
Yeah. My goodness, this is fabulous. When are you going to graduate?
Well, I'm kind of on a slow program right now. I'm a junior, and I estimate I'll probably be in for another 2 years because I'm going.
And the point is, you're working with it as we speak, because your book, it isn't a book, it's a, can we call it a...
It's a zine.
A zine.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a zine with Sarah Merck and Lucy Bellwood.
Mm-hmm. And the artwork in there is absolutely fabulous.
Yes, Lucy Bellwood did a wonderful job on the artwork. It's absolutely mm-hmm. beautiful. Mm-hmm. And Sarah was, couldn't have done it without her. So
it's fabulous. I saw it for the first time this morning before we went on the show, and I want to come on and emphasize that a little bit more. So again, what are some of the things that we can do to bridge gaps? I know I'm a professional writer and a poet. I've been published many times. Oxford was the last publisher. Oxford University published my last book, Negotiating Shadows. And it's about addiction issues and poverty. I work with that. And so my way of making the world a better place to live and trying to get people to understand, well, I don't have to try to get people to understand. I think it's our obligation to stay in connection, mm-hmm. in a state of unity and oneness in order to make life more wonderful for all of us. Because the non-disabled suffer too. They just suffer from something else. And everybody's under stress and conflict. So that's just part of life.
Right.
So mine is poetry and the spoken word and writing and working on the street with the homeless and whatnot, using the poetry and as a tool for conflict resolution. You're using art as a tool for awareness and conflict resolution amongst, I suppose, even the fellow disabled, right?
Yes, absolutely. One of my former teachers, one of the best examples I've ever seen, he became blind as an adult. And mm-hmm. has been so successful going around sharing his experience in museums as a blind person that he's now making a career out of it. And I just think that's fantastic. And I looked up to him so much, thinking, here he is in this position. I can do this if he can do this. You
what
know
is
what
his
I mean?
Name?
Carmen Papalia.
And does he live here in Portland?
No, I think he lives in Vancouver, BC right
oh,
now.
My.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fabulous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we're human beings and we're souls here for a short period of time, and we've all got a mission and a reason for doing what we do, and I'm just so appreciative of what you're doing under the circumstances to be able to bring awareness and to bring... So a little bit more about your program.
Well, the program itself is very open. There are so many forms of art that can be used in social context that it really leaves it very open. But what I'm interested in is writing, photography, videography as well. I do some painting and things like that, but I don't see myself being a painter. I see myself capturing images and using words to express myself.
I didn't know that about you. We'll have to get together and do some words, fellow word people. What would be a typical day doing that? I know you're in training right now and whatnot, but you obviously have a passion and it's going to be your life's work. So give us a little bit more detail. It's yummy stuff. I want to know more. Give me more.
Well, I'm kind of drawing.
For instance, if you had a client or a person that, you know, could benefit from your work, what would be the approach? What's the structure of that? What does it look like? How does it work?
Well, I approach people kind of like I did with this magazine, mm-hmm. With, you know, an idea. I like to work collaboratively. That's a main key thing. And that is something that we need to emphasize in community, in art, in any kind of work,
yes.
is the collaborative process.
Yes.
And so I start with a group of people and we have an idea and we exchange ideas and it grows and grows. And, you know, having two heads is better than one, having three heads is even better than that. And, you know, you could just build on it until you find something that says, this makes sense and it could help other people. And let's do something about it. And it could be in the form of a performance. It can be going to the museum and looking at particular artworks. It could be video. It could be audio. There's just so many forms it can take. And what, like I said, what is really attracting me right now is the photography and the writing.
That is fabulous. Yeah. Sounds like our friendship table.
Sounds like the friendship table. I think you should start the friendship table.
Well, I started a friendship table years ago, and it wasn't called that at that time. And we would get people that would come and go. And I started a writing table over at Elm Court downtown. And people would come and they loved it, but I couldn't get the stick-to-itiveness that writing requires. So that kind of, it went on for a while, and I had a couple of people that ended up continuing that activity. That was kind of my way of bringing people together collaboratively. But people that are under that much stress have a hard time sticking to something. And that's something that I found in my experiment with trying to use my art as a way to bring people together and for stress reduction and conflict resolution and whatnot. So I started this thing called the Friendship Table, and I think, haven't you been there? You're coming, I think,
yes,
the next time.
To the next
we
month.
Do this once a month, and we usually do it over at a Japanese tea shop on 10th Street, right across from the back of the museum. In fact, the tea shop is called Back of the Museum. It's a Japanese tea shop. Fabulous. And they have a big Walton table. I call it the Walton table. You know, the Waltons.
To seat the whole family.
And a big table in the front, and I reserve it, and I just call all the people I know and say, we're going to come together and have a friendship table, and everybody shares what they're doing to make life more wonderful for other people and to be of service and to talk about their problems and, you know, whatever. But we do it through poetry and writing and images. So I'm looking forward to you joining us and bringing your photography and maybe filming it or whatever.
Absolutely.
Please do. You're absolutely welcome.
That would be wonderful.
Well, we have about 5 minutes. We have 2 minutes. All right. Yes. So what a final statement do you want to make, Laura, about your situation, about your what you want to do, what you're doing? I'm so admiring you right now. You're one of my heroes now. So.
Oh, thank you, Grace.
Because, come on, I mean, this is wonderful. I just met Laura. Ooh. Right before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So her friend Jill bought my futon. I put my art studio where the futon was. Laura came along, and that's how we met. So appreciate you being in my life. What a treasure you are. Final statements, websites, something, a way to reach you.
A way to reach me? My email is laura_sandow@hotmail.com, and you can also reach me on Facebook. So either one of those would be ways to contact me and ask me questions, join in a project I'm doing, or just to get to know me.
Wonderful. And it's Laura, Laura Sandow, Sandow. And you can reach the Friendship Table, and that's a whole bunch of us getting together and doing stuff, and that's Grace_Eagle@hotmail.com and www.negotiatingshadows.com. So thank you, Laura, so much for coming on. You've been an incredible guest, and I so appreciate you hauling me over here and giving us a fabulous interview for KBOO.
Thank you, Grace. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
Hey, KBOO supporters, we just sent you a card, so watch your mailbox. It's an opportunity to give a little more assistance at this time of year to your listener-sponsored, volunteer-powered community radio station. Yep, tax time. That means that your donation makes a difference, and it'll really make a difference for KBOO because you can help us qualify for Oregon Cultural Trust matching funds. You can get more information about this on our website at kboo.fm/year-end-gift-2013.
My first time ever on the radio was on KBOO about 10 years ago on the Soundbox with Dina B. And I've been doing radio ever since. I love KBOO.
KBOO is such a friendly, laid-back, fun environment. There's a lot of freedom here.
Boy, all I can say is that they just give me the complete freedom to play every single thing I feel like playing, and that's a rare thing in radio stations nowadays, and I sure appreciate it.
It's a passion of mine to investigate and to find and to share.
Come on down to the next volunteer orientation on Wednesday, January 8th from 7 to 9 p.m. here at the KBOO Studios at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
Welcome to the Health and Healthcare Forum. I'm Roberta Hall. Our series on health and healthcare features conversations about diverse health concerns. I enjoy these conversations, and I hope you do too.
In the third report from the Oregon Public Health Association meetings in 2013, we have a conversation with the keynote speaker for day two, Lillian Shirley, director of Multnomah County Public Health, and soon to leave that post to work for the Oregon Health Authority. One theme of the conference concerns bringing public health and medical care together. Her comments give current details on how that is going. Welcome, Shirley.
Thank you so much.
You talk about many things this morning as a keynote speaker on the second day of the conference. One of the things that, of course, is in people's minds is the CCO transformation. Just give us a little background on how you've intersected with it, what your work has been with this transformation over these last, 3 years.
Everything new is old. I think that's important to remember. What is going on right now? It seems new, but it is based on principles that have been proven to improve the health of the community. Things like not paying to individual employees, but paying